Welcome to Climate Conversations, the podcast from MIT's ClimateX, the global community for climate action. I'm Rajesh Kasturirangan, and I'm joined here by Dave Damlore, my ClimateX co-founder.
Hey, Rajesh.
And we'll soon be joined by Hannah Payne, who is the sustainability coordinator for the city of Somerville. Dave, how did you get in touch with Hannah Payne?
I was at a Massachusetts Climate Action Network event in which Hannah was on the panel. And she was telling about all the exciting work that she's been doing in the city of Somerville as the sustainability coordinator. So I followed up, and she agreed to come talk with us.
Yeah, I believe Somerville is going to be carbon neutral by 2050.
That's right. And they've been doing tremendous work in reaching out to all members of the Somerville community, the businesses, the individual citizens and neighborhood groups and associations, as well as coordinating all around the Boston area.
Well, let's see what Hannah has to say about all of this.
Yeah, I'm excited to hear, too.
We are so happy today to have Hannah Payne, who is the sustainability coordinator for the city of Somerville, and a DUSP alum, DUSP being the Department of Urban Studies and Planning at MIT. Hannah, so nice to see you.
Welcome, Hannah.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
So, Hannah, how did you get to be the sustainability coordinator?
Yeah, that's a good question. So I graduated from DUSP, so Department of Urban Studies and Planning from MIT, with my master's in city planning last spring, so spring of 2016. And there I focused on climate change planning, specifically climate adaptation planning, and then did a lot of work on community engagement as well. And so after that, my first job is where I am at now, which is with the city of Somerville as a sustainability coordinator.
And the city of Somerville, for our listeners who don't know the Boston area, is right next to Cambridge.
Yeah, so it's a city of about 80,000 people. It's just northwest of Boston. So in other larger cities, it might be considered a neighborhood of that city, but we're actually our own municipality in Somerville and the densest city in New England.
Anything else that sets Somerville apart from the rest of the world?
Fluff was invented in Somerville. that marshmallow spread that people like to put on sandwiches. So that's one fun fact about Somerville. But it's a pretty residential city close to Boston. So we're really connected with our neighbors and, you know, with Cambridge and Boston. We pretty connected in terms of what we need to think about for planning.
My daughter was born in the city of Somerville. Well, she was born in a hospital in Boston, but she came home to the city of Somerville. So, Hannah, what does the sustainability coordinator do?
Yeah, so I work in the Office of Sustainability and Environment, and our office is three people right now. So we have a director, myself, and then an environmental coordinator, and we do some service delivery, so recycling as one, but mostly we work on programming and policy work. So everything from energy to electric vehicle charging stations, some kind of traditional environmental stuff around pollution and waste, and then also what I'm working on right now, climate change planning.
And last spring, there was a big event, I think, or a series of events. Maybe you could tell our listeners a little bit about what happened this last spring.
Sure. So one of the kind of other big things that I've been working on other than managing the city's climate change plan is working on doing more community outreach on sustainability and environmental issues. So I put together Somerville's first Sustainaville Week. So Sustainaville is the city's brand for sustainability. So anything that kind of touches sustainability can fall under Sustainaville. So Sustainaville Week was a week of events around Earth Day, really just trying to engage with community members, do some fun educational events and activities, and get the word out about our office and what some of the work that we're doing, and also help make people aware of Mayor Curtatone's goal of being carbon neutral by 2050.
Terrific. What sort of response did you get?
It was a great response. So we did one of the events that I liked the most was the Tiny Great Outdoors Festival that we put on with the Arts Council. So the Somerville Arts Council does festivals throughout the year, a lot of really fun things in Somerville that is one of the things people really love about Somerville. And so this festival was focused on celebrating Somerville's tiny great outdoors. So we, as I said before, we're the densest city in New England. We don't have a ton of open space, and we have a lot of small pocket parks, and try to take advantage of the space that we do have. And so it was celebrating kind of the urban environments. So we had our office there talking about the work we do. We had the city's arborist there planting a tree, and we also had some urban naturalists who could speak to kind of different species that you might find in urban environments.
That's great. So how many people does your office reach sort of routinely or less so?
I don't know that I have a good answer for that one. But our office works a lot with other departments within the city, so it's hard to say, you know, how many people we reach. We definitely reach a number of people kind of directly through the work we do. So I am managing the city's climate change plan, as I mentioned, and it's called Somerville Climate Forward. And for the kickoff meeting for that, which we had in June, kind of to introduce the community to the project, we had over 100 people attend, and now we're setting up, we have working groups for that project on different topics, so ranging from consumption and waste to energy to health and well-being. And so on all of those groups, we have 75 residents that have signed up to participate in that throughout the project. So I don't have a number for you, but we have a number of people who were engaging directly and then kind of also through working with other departments. So we collaborate frequently with the planning department in Somerville to think about how to, you know, bring sustainability into the zoning code update. So they're then talking to a lot more people, and, you know, while we're not doing that engagement ourselves, kind of the work that we're doing does touch a lot of people.
So you're sort of catalytic agents. You're lighting fires here and there and trying to ignite interest and engagement.
Yeah. And I think kind of also working within the city with other departments to integrate sustainability and climate change into the work that they're already doing. So we're not trying to take on all of that work, because a lot of things are better done through other departments. So, you know, planning can do things through zoning and through park design to manage stormwater, things like that. Transportation planners can think about, you know, they're already working on getting people out of their cars and walking more and biking more and taking transit more. And so that's not necessarily something our office would work on, but we can help provide information or data and policy ideas to those other folks.
Fantastic. So tell us a little bit more about this. So you said Somerville Climate Forward?
Yeah. So this is the city's first climate change plan. And the way that we're approaching it in Somerville is doing both a climate mitigation plan and a climate adaptation plan. So looking at ways to reduce the city's contribution to climate change by reducing greenhouse gas emissions and working towards Mayor Curtatone's goal of being carbon neutral by 2050, and also looking at ways to prepare for the impacts of climate change. And so this is a little bit different than how a lot of other cities have approached this. A lot of cities do a climate action plan focused mostly on mitigation, and then we'll maybe do a climate adaptation or resilience or preparedness plan, whatever they're calling it, to think about ways to prepare for climate change. And we really see those as kind of different sides of the same coin. So we want to be addressing those together and holistically. And so that's kind of where we're heading to with Somerville Climate Forward. And so we're just starting the stage of looking at different solutions that will be analyzed, that will eventually bring through as the kind of key actions that the city will move forward at the end of the plan.
This is fantastic, because you're saying that mitigation and adaptation are two sides of the same coin. Is this process being documented, and will it be shared with the public, not just the citizens of Somerville, but also the world at large?
Yeah, so we are hoping to document what we're doing and have it, you know, have a plan that is accessible to many people, and that shows kind of the steps we went through to get there, especially because we are engaging so many people. We want to make sure that people can really see kind of how their involvement is being used throughout the process. But I think thinking about beyond Somerville, we'll definitely, you know, share our plan and what we've learned. And one of the ways that we often share our work is through the Urban Sustainability Directors Network, which is USDN for short, which is a network of sustainability directors and sustainability offices of cities and towns throughout the United States and Canada that kind of exchange ideas, best practices, answer each other's questions. And so this network has been really helpful to not just our office and the work we've done, but I think sustainability work throughout the country, because people are able to kind of draw from one another and not start from scratch every time.
What's the web address again?
I believe it's just usdn.org. So it's it's a network organization, so cities have to pay dues to...
Oh, not anybody can't just step into that space.
Right, right.
Okay.
And I think that one of the benefits of that in kind of working in the public sector is that on calls, and you can speak to folks from cities throughout the country and ask questions that, you know, talk about politics or talk about things that, you know, maybe you can kind of get the nitty-gritty details from other folks on what the challenges are, and I think get a little bit more honest feedback than you might in just like a report from what happened.
So if people are in positions like yours, mm-hmm. it's something you might want to seriously consider if they're not already in the network to join it.
Definitely.
Okay.
There are some parts of the website that are public. They put out different reports, and I believe they have a whole initiative on equity and sustainability. And so that section is available to the public for kind of information on how to think about bringing in equity into sustainability work.
So are there other cities that Somerville is learning from or partnering with? Like, what is there a concrete form in which the USDN actually functions in collaborations and projects?
Yeah, so through USDN is one way, but we also, on a more local level, partner with our neighboring communities. So one of the ways we do that is through the Metro Mayor's Climate Preparedness Task Force, and that is the 14 cities and towns in the Boston metro area that get together. The staff from the sustainability departments, whoever works on climate change planning in those cities, we get together on a regular basis to discuss climate preparedness and what each of us are doing and share data and best practices, answer questions, things like that. MAPC, so the Metropolitan Area Planning Council, staffs that and facilitates that task force. And so that's one way that we work with Boston and Cambridge and Medford and Chelsea and all of the different cities in the Boston region.
Excellent. So what's the topic that recurs most often in these kinds of meetings? Is there something that everybody seems to be concerned with?
Yeah. So, I mean, I think sea level rise is one thing that is an issue for the entire region. But what we kind of use the meetings more for is talking about data needs and things like doing climate change vulnerability assessments. So, you know, learning from one another. So when Boston put out Climate Ready Boston, they presented on their work and we were able to ask questions about that. Talking about kind of how did you work through certain things on understanding the urban heat island effect in the region, and then also collaborating on grant proposals and different tools that are kind of looking at the regional impacts. And I think one of the challenges, but also one of the major benefits of it, is that the cities within the group are at really different stages in their climate change planning process. So cities like Boston and Cambridge are kind of first to go on this work, and Somerville were kind of second, and then a number of other cities are just getting started. So Somerville has done a greenhouse gas inventory. We've completed a climate change vulnerability assessment. And so now we're doing our climate change plan. There are some cities that don't have the same sort of staff capacity that Somerville does or Cambridge or Boston. And so they haven't been able to kind of do as much work, but they can learn from us and some of the other cities and draw on that so they don't have to, again, start from scratch and can kind of take the pieces that we've done and think about what that means for their community.
I was having a look at your really well put together website, the Somerville Sustainaville, and really impressed with everything you've done. One of the things that jumped out at me was that Somerville has been grappling with the same things over the years. It's just more exaggerated versions of the same things. Could you say a little bit more about the ways in which Somerville is vulnerable?
Sure. So some of the key things that we looked at in our climate change vulnerability assessment were impacts from increasing temperatures, so hotter summers and more heat waves, impacts from precipitation-based flooding, and impacts from sea level rise and storm surge along the Mystic River. And so in Somerville, you know, what we're seeing is that where it floods today during a heavy rainstorm, because we have flooding events when it rains a lot, there's not a lot of place for the water to flow, and we have an aging sewer system. So, you know, we're dealing with some of these challenges today without the increase in rain from larger storms. So on that front, what we need to prepare for is more frequent flooding because, you know, with climate change, we're expecting rainstorms to bring, you know, 30% more precipitation. So trying to think about that as we're, you know, trying to also manage the flooding that we're experiencing today. And then for heat waves, you know, we have hot summers here in Massachusetts, and we'll experience heat waves here, but the change will be more frequent heat waves that last more days. So it's something that our, you know, public health department is already working on and knows about and has systems in place to manage, you know, high heat days and heat waves, but we need to be thinking about that happening more frequently moving into the future. And then storm surge and sea level rise, that's one where we really haven't experienced those impacts as much in Somerville. So what's different about Somerville than, say, Boston is that in Boston, during a king tide, you'll get some flooding up onto the sidewalks today. So you can kind of see that, you know, this is maybe what sea level rise would start to look like in the future. In Somerville, we are not looking at the climate models, we're not facing the same sort of impacts from sea level rise of mean high tide flooding. We would only see flooding along the Mystic River with the combination of sea level rise and more intense storms. So in that 100-year flood or 1% chance of a flood. And that would really be one of the ways that we could experience flooding in Somerville is by storm surge overtopping or going around the Amelia Earhart Dam on the Mystic River. So we have some infrastructure in place that helps protect us today, but looking into the future, if we aren't preparing and making changes to some of that infrastructure, we could see flooding from larger storms.
So moving on to, because these are very, very complex problems, right? And I'm just thinking, is this exactly the kind of thing that DUSP wants their alumni to do? Because it feels like such a complex combination of understanding, you know, weather patterns, urban planning, political exigencies of various kinds. So do you feel like you got exactly what you wanted from DUSP to be able to do the work that you're doing?
Well, I'll say that this is the work that I wanted to be doing when I went to DUSP. This is, you know, why I was interested in city planning, because I've always been interested in environmental issues, but I really wanted to address it at the local level, and I thought city planning was kind of the best way to do that. And I really like thinking about a lot of different things at the same time and being able to pull things together. And so I think that this is the sort of job that DUSP does set people up well to do. So, you know, at DUSP, we had to do a lot of group projects with people who were interested in all sorts of different things. So affordable housing, design, and really it forced me to think about kind of how to bring different elements together and different interests together and think about those all at the same time while moving forward on finding solutions. So I think that's one of the things that DUSP set me up well to do.
And it struck me from looking at your website, it was reflecting exactly what you said, that you're making the dots visible and connecting them for people.
That's what we're trying to do.
Which is terrific.
So much of this, at least from the way you have talked about, there seems to be a research component. I'm not sure if it's necessarily academic research, but, you know, there's a need for data, there's a need for modeling, there's a need for communication. And Boston is, of course, the home of so many well-known institutions of higher education. So is this work done in partnership with academic groups and labs, or is it mostly done in-house within the city and elsewhere?
Yeah, so for some of the baseline studies we've done for climate change planning, so our greenhouse gas inventory, our climate change vulnerability assessment, we worked with consultants on that. So not necessarily working with academic institutions, but kind of going out and hiring experts to help us with some of that research and rigorous analysis, because, you know, we don't have the time in our positions in the city, you know, we're a staff of three to do all of that work in-house.
And are there, I'm just thinking, you know, many of our listeners, as well as some of the people we want to reach, are students who, like you, might think, wow, this is great work. Are there opportunities for them to intern or enter into this research planning work while they're still students?
Yeah, so our office tends to have internships. We have an intern this summer who is updating our greenhouse gas inventory, so kind of taking on that whole project. And we've had interns different semesters throughout, well, even since before I started. So there are definitely opportunities, and I would encourage students to look, you know, for those opportunities, because I think you learn so much by working in the public sector and working for a city. It's a really different experience than talking about policy at an academic setting. You learn a lot of the kind of nuts and bolts of how things actually get done and some of the challenges that we face working in the public sector.
What are a couple things that you've learned since you graduated from MIT last year?
You know, working for a city, some of the things that I was like, oh, these are like the sort of policies that I would want to implement. You learn some of why those don't work or what would need to happen. I think navigating politics and the different kind of local nuances of, you know, I've learned a lot about kind of Massachusetts state policy and what cities can and can't do. And then I've also learned a lot kind of the technical stuff on the job as well. So, you know, about solar or, you know, one of the programs that we just launched in Somerville is community choice electricity aggregation. I didn't know anything about that. So while I was at MIT, and I think this is maybe unique to DUSP, was, you know, I did learn more about kind of the systems thinking policy. And now I have the opportunity to, like, on the job, really dig into kind of more technical programs and things like that.
What a great opportunity it is.
Yeah.
To extend your learning.
Yeah, it's great. I love to continue to learn.
You mentioned Massachusetts state policies and also the political landscape. What kind of political support are you getting for your work? You know, certainly within the city, and I don't know if you need political support beyond the city, but speak to both if you can.
Yeah, so I feel very fortunate to work for the city of Somerville. Mayor Curtatone is very supportive of taking action on climate change. You know, he has set the city's goal to be carbon neutral by 2050 and has really kind of put a lot of energy behind the work that we're doing. So I feel that, you know, we have political support at the top in Somerville to really take strong action on climate change. And he's been very supportive of Somerville Climate Forward and the work that we're doing with that. And then also the Board of Aldermen within Somerville are also very supportive of this work. So I think, you know, being in a progressive city, it's great to have the support from leadership to really take this work seriously, and that there is, you know, funding behind it to fund my position and some of the work that we're doing in our office.
You're also working with the Somerville Commission on Energy Use and Climate Change. Can you tell our listeners a little bit about what's going on there?
Sure. So the Commission on Energy Use and Climate Change is a commission made up of Somerville residents that have expertise or experience in climate change, energy, environmental issues, and they are appointed by the mayor. And then they, you know, meet monthly and provide advice and feedback on our work and help us think through different ideas, and they bring ideas to our office. And then they also advise the mayor kind of on policy and programs and kind of the direction that Somerville should take. So they were actually integral in kind of pushing for that carbon neutrality goal and helping the city see that that is the goal that we need to set in order to keep climate change in check, and that we'll set that goal, and now our job is to figure out how to get there.
Great. Talking about how to get there, we are getting towards the end of this conversation. And we always end our conversation with a magic wand question, right? And today we might try to do a double magic wand. So the first magic wand question is, you know, you've been in Somerville for a year. You've kind of got a sense for the landscape. If there was one pressing issue that you would like addressed, what would that be?
One of the biggest challenges we face in Somerville is that we have really old building stock. So they're not going anywhere in the near future. And so what I think I would love to do is to, you know, wave a magic wand and have all of those homes and, you know, older buildings have perfect insulation, be weatherized, have solar on their roofs, because it's going to be a real challenge to retrofit all of our buildings in order to really achieve the carbon reduction that we need to. And the biggest challenge with that, and this will, I think, lead into my magic wand question, is that doing all of those retrofits costs money. And housing is already very expensive in Somerville. We're, you know, seeing housing prices go up. And so affordable housing is kind of the other big pressing issue that I see in Somerville kind of as we're thinking about climate change. So, you know, if I could wave a magic wand and have for free everyone have safe, energy efficient, carbon neutral housing, that would be my dream. So my magic wand question for the listeners of this podcast is really a climate equity question. So how can we further our climate change goals and have deep carbon reductions without perpetuating gentrification and furthering the affordable housing crisis that we're seeing in many of our cities that are like Somerville and Boston?
That's such a wonderful question, Hannah. And all of us here at ClimateX are very, very concerned exactly about those kinds of climate justice issues. And we're so happy that you came here and shared your thoughts on your work in the city of Somerville.
And we hope that people who are just listening to this right now can give us a comment that answers Hannah's question, as well as anything else you'd like to add in.
Thank you so much, Hannah.
Thanks, Hannah.
Thank you.
Climate Conversations can be found anywhere you listen to a podcast, including iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and if there's something that we haven't covered, tell us. Visit us at climatex.mit.edu and join the conversation.